Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's roundtable podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. On this week's show, it's time for one of our favorite shows of every year when we look back on how we did with the resolutions and predictions we made this year, and we decide which ones we're going with for next year. And as always, we will close the show with what's making us happy this week, so stick around.
Earlier this month, at Susie Sussin tweeted, after downloading the NPR One app, after being told to for the thousandth time by an NPR podcast, thank you, thank you, thank you. Hashtag insert shamed face here. Don't wait like Susie did. NPR One is ready to make driving, cleaning the house, or your post-holiday escape better. Find NPR One in your app store.
Before we get started here in historic Studio 44, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I write about books, comics, and other stuff for the NPR website.
And joining us in our fourth chair from New York is our friend Kat Chow. Kat, what do you do at NPR?
I'm a reporter with Code Switch.
You know, Kat is with us in part because Kat was here for last year's show, so she's the one who made resolutions and predictions.
She's on the hook.
I like to call this show Embrace Your Failures 2016.
How wrong I was.
How wrong I was.
All right. 2016 has been good for that.
Well, exactly. And if you've listened to Pop Culture Happy Hour for a while, you know that this is the show we do every year. We're going to do our resolutions first. That means check on last year's and make up this year's. And that means our first piece of business is to remind ourselves of last year's resolutions. Stephen Thompson, I know that you love it when I start with you in this kind of conversation.
This is a tone setter right here.
That's right. So we're going to start by hearing Stephen's resolution for 2016 that he made last year at this time.
Well, on the personal front, my big thing is I want to give stuff away, to accumulate fewer CDs, and also just like give stuff away from a standpoint of trying to put a little bit of good into the world and put a little bit of clutter into other people's homes. Mm-hmm. I want to be a better pen pal. I want to just be in the practice of writing and communicating more. And one way to get to that point is I really, really, really want to try, and this is difficult to measure, but I want to spend less of my spare time marinating in the internet, and particularly the grievance-based corners of the internet. 2016 is an election year. It's very easy to get sucked into that. I want to do that turning off the router thing and devote as much energy as possible to creating rather than spending so much energy, like I said, marinating in grievances and other things that happen. But also taking more time to really enjoy pop culture. Like I want to really bust out the old turntable a little bit more, get a few more iPod docs, spend more time living my life around the house with music and art and things that I enjoy.
Oh, God. Yeah. So, Stephen, is one of your resolutions for this year to get pithier, maybe?
Oh,
it's funny. I wrote down here, I will not blow every conceivable resolution in one breath, thereby leaving nothing for next year.
Much better.
But I do think all of those sound great, and I should totally try that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow. So you're just renewing all your resolutions like a book at the library.
I have in my notes here the words nope, 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 nope.
You just need a little more time.
I just need...
would have gotten that if we had one more month left.
You know what? I just need one more year. Just another 12-month block
That's
of time
fair.
To try all of those things. Those are all excellent goals.
Are those your resolutions for next year?
No, they're not. I mean, I figured I should
come up with some new ones.
Okay, so first of all that I need to do is actually create more.
Yeah, sure.
So rather than your vague platitudes, I will write something for publication every workday in 2017.
Wow, that's ambitious.
I will keep a count and I will hit 250 bylines, just pieces of writing. In 2017.
How did you arrive at
it? It's just basically one piece of writing per workday with 2 weeks of vacation thrown in. Will I achieve this goal? Yes.
I like it, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, let's hear your resolutions for 2016.
I love games. I love video games, but I have never really gone online with video games. Mm-hmm. But this year, I think I'm actually going to do it because I did get this game called Star Wars Battlefront, which has a campaign, which has a section that you can play by yourself. But it is a mighty thin gruel compared to what's going on online, all these giant maps and things you can do. So despite... It does feel like being in a kiddie pool, splashing around in a kiddie pool right next to the ocean, the turbid, roiling, misogynistic, homophobic, racist ocean. But I'm going to jump in with both feet. I'm going to get myself a headset. So I'm going to do it. This is what I mean about bold. I'm going to frag. I'm going to snipe. I'm going to camp the respawn.
I'm going to dual wield
in CQB.
Yeah,
I'm going to
impressive.
Nerf the flange. I'm going to have to look up some more
cards. I have to Google all this
But
later.
this is what I'm going to do. Okay, that was A, brief, and B, let's call that swing and a miss.
Actually, you didn't frag and snipe?
Let's call it a pop fly.
You might have fragged the flange.
No, I don't think I did. I did go online. I did borrow somebody's headset. I did try to get through some of these maps, and I got my butt kicked, and also got some just stupid abuse from 14-year-olds, which I can get outside my own house for free. I tried it. I dipped my toe into the waters, and the waters turned out to be dumb. So, so no, I didn't do it.
Well, but you tried it, though. I think that's the purpose of the resolution. Like, you can't ever promise that you're going to like something. You can only promise that
you'll try it.
You're going to try it, and you're going to go in with an open mind, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't, you know?
Yeah, and why spend your time doing something that's not great?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I agree. As for next year, I'm about, I think, to launch into a big writing project, the precise dimensions of which are still coalescing. But because of that, I'm going to need some more random access memory. I'm going to need to defragment my mental hard drive. So I'm going to cut back on Twitter. Now, I am on Twitter a tremendous lot, so me cutting back even by 70% puts me right about baseline with the normal humanity. Mm-hmm. But I'm still going to do it. We talked before about how something about Twitter for me scratches the same itch that writing does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It feels like writing. It's not writing.
Mm-hmm.
It scratches the same itch that comedy does. It feels like comedy, but it's not comedy. You're not really risking anything. Mm-hmm. And, I also found that I was starting to, when I would open Twitter, I would go to my notifications first before, like, looking at the world around me. And that, I don't want to be that guy. My inner Calvinist sort of rebels against that. So I went into this as a writing exercise. Can I write a B-minus dad joke in 140 characters? And that muscle has gotten about as jacked as it's ever going to get.
Pretty good muscle.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You're very kind.
They're so good.
I'm joining our listening public in mourning.
No. This is healthy for the world, and it's healthy for me. I mean, I can do that now with a regularity that one might call metamucilian. One probably wouldn't, but one might. So I don't think I'm gonna. I can't go cold turkey because I do find
70%. That's pretty good.
There's still Bloom's Day.
Certain venerable holiday traditions.
I was gonna say on the holidays you'll at least bust it out.
We'll see. But that's my resolution, and it's measurable. Cutting back on Twitter.
So 70%. You're actually gonna count?
I threw out a metric, so I bet I might as well stick
to
it.
Make a spreadsheet.
I am gonna make a spreadsheet.
Wow, fantastic! Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. I will miss your tweeting, but look forward to your other writing. And for those of you who don't know, Glenn is writing a lot more for the blog right now than he used to. So it has become much more true than it was for a while that Glenn writes about books and comic books and other things. At npr.org/monkeysee, you can find Glenn on there with me. So, Glenn Weldon, thank you very much. Kat Chow, let's listen to Kat's resolution for 2016. I don't remember what any of these are. I can't wait to hear.
Oh, boy. I want to teach my dad how to stream things on the internet.
That's cool.
Like how to use Netflix, how to go on Amazon
Sharing
Prime.
Is part of culture.
Yeah, because I think there are a lot of shows that he would maybe be interested in, like Man in the High Castle. But every time I talk about these shows, he's always like, I don't know. I don't know how to use Netflix.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then personally, I want to write more, but I think with me, I've always been a little afraid to write and be a bit bold with my writing and kind of go a more personal route. I find myself being very tentative, and I'm tired of that. I don't want to do that. So I want to just put myself out there and take more risks, because that's okay. And what's going to happen? Am I going to get yelled at on the internet? That happens already. So yes, this is for me branching out, putting more of myself on the line, maybe trying my hand at more fiction. And by more, I mean fiction in general, more personal essays, that sort of thing.
You totally did this.
Well, not the Netflix thing. I didn't have enough patience. That was the toughest. I think I installed Netflix on my dad's iPad, and then he watched one episode of Property Brothers.
Wait, yeah. You did install it on your dad's
on his iPad? But
so you did this?
I guess so. But I don't think he knows how to use it.
Yeah,
I did do the other thing though, which I'm really proud of.
I wrote
a little bit, but I wrote two personal essays that I'm especially happy with, and I mean it's two out of a 12-month year, so I'm looking forward to doing more.
Well, let's signal boost those essays, because they were both really, really
good.
Right. Can we
remind people where to find those?
So I wrote one essay for Lenny Letter about my mother's shoes, which I was gifted 10 or so years after her death. And basically the essay is about what those shoes meant to me and how they symbolize a lot more than just kind of tattered old shoes. And then the other one is about the word Oriental and how my dad still uses it and how that's very fraught for the both of us.
And that one's on NPR, right?
Yeah. Yes, and that's on NPR.org.
So the Lenny Letter one is called what? How do the people search for it?
In My Mom's Shoes.
Okay. And the NPR one, do you remember the title?
It's called My Oriental Father.
Yeah, the shoe essay is also subtitled Drowning in Stephen Thompson's Tears.
Oh, it's very good.
Oh, I cried all over the place. It was so good.
They're both very good.
You're such a sap.
All right. Hit us for 2017, Kat Chow.
Oh, man. All right. So I've been pretty much hibernating since I moved to New York 2 months ago and since the election happened. So I think in 2017, I want to leave my apartment more and enjoy what this city has to offer.
Yes.
So go to more shows, go to more author readings, not hole up in the winter forever and the entirety of 2017, because I feel like a lot of us are going to be inclined to do that. And just kind of not be on Twitter so much.
This is very interesting.
That's a theme. Mm-hmm. I was thinking I might tweet more.
Yeah. The thing is, I've kind of already done that too. I mean, right now I am, but I'm off and on. I also tweet somewhat less than I used to in many times of the day. I don't know. I support you, Kat, although I will also say holing up in New York in the winter is also a venerable tradition of which you should be proud. And congratulations. I think for a pop culture happy hour resolution, how much you followed your writing, the writing part of that, is in the 95th percentile.
Yeah. Oh, grand slam.
Yeah, it's a grand slam.
Thank you
very, very much, Kat Chow. So we're on to the next. No, it's All right, I made some resolutions too. Gosh, let's hear it. It's sort of similar stuff that I've talked about before. It's always books and it's always trying to find new people, but I feel like I have to put some structure around those things. So I'm going to say one book a month, but one book a month that is not something that I am reading for pleasure that I would naturally pick up, but something that, well, not for pleasure, but, something that I am reading because I think it will be challenging and interesting and different. So I'm going to do that. That's on my list. And then I'm going to try to explore somebody's work or music or writing or whatever every week. Pithy is
that? Actually the pithiest of them all.
The pithiest of them all. I have to stop resolving to read books. I do it every year. I mean it. I feel like it's one of those watched pot never boils thing where if I stop promising to read books, I'll read more books because every year I promise to read books and every year I fail. Totally. I failed. The new person a week thing, I didn't really keep track. I do feel like I tried to be more, more proactive about seeking out people's work this year. I meant to sort of keep track. I can't really give a good measurement of success. But I feel like I obeyed in spirit, but almost definitely not in letter.
I feel like I've seen a lot of new people and new voices from your Twitter feed that you were able to kind of signal boost.
I think that's right. I think I take that seriously, but I don't think I quantified it the way that I felt like I needed to. And I would continue to. I'm sort of like Stephen in that I wouldn't mind kind of re-upping that one and trying to continue to do that same thing.
I feel like you've done more of that than I have of mine.
I hear ya. So 2017 resolutions. It's interesting. Several of us, either for last year or for this upcoming year, have creation resolutions instead of or in addition to consumption resolutions. Because I usually make consumption resolutions, but Stephen made an output resolution, and you know, Glenn's Twitter resolution is in support of an output resolution, mm-hmm. essentially. So this is personal risk. Uh-huh. We're going to do personal risk.
I know where you're going.
I'm going to finish my novel that I'm writing.
Mm-hmm. I think you will.
Glenn made me the other day stop saying I'm working on this novel project.
Yep.
He said, just say you're writing a novel.
It's a novel.
The thing that is really fun about this project is that I have no idea whether I can do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, I admit, been a while since I did a new thing that I genuinely think it's like 50-50. I can do it or I can't do it. And I honestly have no idea. I'm not like well-trained in fiction like Glenn is necessarily. It's a fascinating thing to really honestly, for the first time since I was, you know, earlier in my career, feel like there's a good chance that I cannot do the thing wow. that I'm aspiring to do. But I aspire to do it. So I'm going to decide to finish it.
If you didn't have that feeling, Linda, I would not want to read it. No one would want to read it. You need to have that feeling. Yeah. That feeling is telling you're
but
on the right track.
But like I'm confident about the other kinds of stuff that I do for the most part. And if nothing else, you know, I will circulate it among my fellow pop culture happy hour panelists and make them read it. So that's A. And the other one is actually also a writing resolution, which is I want to write a piece of criticism or reaction to something new every week. I'm not going to say every day I'm going to have a byline like Crazy Pants Thompson.
I write a lot of short stuff for NPR Music.
Yeah. I'm talking about like, you know, write a significant thing about something new that I've never written about before. Like no going, just going back and like writing about the same things. One new thing a week in 2017, at least. So those are my two resolutions. And I think we have all committed ourselves to some very useful things to do in 2017. I bet that a lot of you also make resolutions, so come and tell us about them at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. Tell us how you did last year. Tell us what's on your plate for next year. When we come back, it's the other half of our year in review. We're going to talk about predictions. Once again, we're accountable for last year's predictions, and we will make next year's predictions, so come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from the Amazon original series, The Man in the High Castle, which imagines a world where the Allies lost World War II and America is ruled by Nazi Germany and imperialist Japan. But revelations and secret prophetic films prove our future belongs to those who change it. Based on the award-winning book by Philip K. Dick, executive produced by Ridley Scott, and winner of 2 Emmy Awards, the new season starts December 16th on Amazon Prime Video.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's our year in review when we talk about our predictions and resolutions for last year and the upcoming year. We just talked about our resolutions. Now we're going to talk about our predictions. Now, first of all, as with the resolutions, first we review how we did last year. Stephen Thompson, we're going to start with you. Don't groan. I want to hear what Stephen Thompson predicted for 2016.
I predict that 3 of the top 10 highest grossing films of 2016 will be big, uproarious, escapist comedies. Kind of akin to like a There's Something About Mary. Silly, goofy, big, maybe gross out comedies as a hallmark of how exhausted people are by just the sheer weight of the world. That in a kind of bruising election year with lots of, it feels like it's going to be, and I know every time at the end of the year I talk about how exhausted everybody's going to be, because that's maybe how I feel at the end of the year. But I think you are going to see a big rise in and a big embrace of big, silly, stupid movies that I think is going to come out as like, that's where your surprise hits are going to come from. Mm-hmm. And that maybe your grim and gritty Batman versus Superman stuff is not as much what people are hungry for. I predict a little bit of like comparative disappointment around Finding Dory. I'm going to predict that
The Finding Nemo sequel.
The Finding Nemo sequel. I'm going to predict that it is not one of the highest grossing movies of 2016. People are going to start talking like, oh no, maybe Pixar has maybe lost its way.
Yeah.
Finally, straight up Grammy prediction, Album of the Year. Everyone is viewing the Album of the Year Grammy as this battle royale between Taylor Swift and Kendrick Lamar. We'll talk about the Grammys on this show. Vegas is giving it 7-1 odds. The Album of the Year, Alabama Shakes. I loved that last prediction. Uh-huh. I was so proud of that last prediction. I was sitting by my television just waiting for that to come true so that I could crow about it in this moment. I was wrong. It's Taylor Swift.
Uh-huh.
I got so many things wrong. How many things can go wrong in like a minute and a half?
Your logic on the films is sound. It's a punishing year. A thirst for escapism is perfectly logical.
Here is what I did not anticipate and what I forgot. Movies take a long time to make.
Mm-hmm.
So your top 10 of the year. Let's see. What was the number one top grossing movie? Finding Dory.
Yeah.
I will say, not a massively acclaimed Pixar movie.
I think it is fair to say that if you look at the Pixar movies and you look at the strength this year of, for example, Zootopia and Moana.
Sure.
I think it is fair to say that Pixar has lost some of its grip on the assumption that they make all the best animated movies.
I think
that is true. I think that happened.
There are tiny kernels of truth. I think the massive success of Deadpool kind of fits into that narrative. But I was looking down. I was like, how did Sausage Party do?
Yeah.
Because I felt like Sausage Party was kind of what I was
you're
thinking
talking about.
Of.
Like, yeah.
I'm
not, yeah.
I wasn't anticipating the actual movie Sausage Party.
Mm-hmm.
$97 million.
Yeah.
Not one of the top 20.
Yeah.
Resolutions and predictions. Not really my thing. So I'm really glad I'm on this episode.
All right. What about 2017? What do you have for us?
All right. So I wanted to do a bunch of little kind of plausible predictions. I want to get something right in 2017. I think La La Land is going to win Best Picture because Hollywood loves itself and life is unfair.
Mm-hmm.
I think everything will be beautiful and no one will die. But the minute someone does, we will blame 2017.
Mm-hmm.
It will be 2017's fault. I think Taylor Swift will release the top-selling album, but it will come with a twist. I don't know exactly what it is. Maybe she will perform all the songs via hologram. I think Guardians of the Galaxy 2 will be the year's top grossing movie. I said in the previous segment, movies are slow to make, so that perfect piece of escapism, you know, can't be made in time to match our collective fatigue as a society. I think in 2017, America will fall in love with a TV show, and the metric I'm going to come up with here is dumber than Wipeout. So we will all have our imaginations captured and or dulled out by something delightfully stupid.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, I want to hear what you predicted.
I just want to remind you that I was going for bold. That was my watchword last year. I want a bold,
yes,
in-your-face,
yes,
prediction.
Yes.
There is a small indie art house film coming out that I predict I'm going to love. And the name of that film is Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Oh, look at the expression on your face. You're surprised. See? Bold. I'm saying bold.
That's what you're not going to love me, this. You already hate this movie.
You are going
movie.
To love
for
it on
me,
what
see,
basis?
This is what I mean. This is exactly what I wanted. So I reserve the right to be pleasantly surprised by this film.
Well, you always had the right to be pleasantly surprised,
sure,
but you are saying you're going to.
I'm not sure that what you are laying out here is a prediction.
Predicting I'm going to like it. Boom. There. Let's just call that a swing and a miss and move on. Somewhere in the middle there thinking, A, it's going to be good. B, I'm going to like it. Both of those things proved untrue.
No.
Yeah.
It's a very hopeful prediction.
Yeah. You can go back and find our episode about it. And Glenn didn't like it.
Nope. I liked the boldness. I appreciated the boldness.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing something similar this year.
All right. Well, what do you have on tap for 2017, buddy?
All right. Linda Holmes, what do these things have in common? Boy Meets World, Twin Peaks, Will and Grace, X-Files, Full House, The Tick, and Mystery Science Theater.
Hmm. All coming back in one form or another, right?
All came back in one form or another. I am going to predict, using an elaborate algorithm I created, exactly what will be relaunched, just for like a one-off thing, not like a whole new series, but
which show will be relaunched. Do it.
Okay, so peak nostalgia.
Sure.
If you look at this chart, the handy-dandy
chart
I have developed here. So on your x-axis, you got the years, starting on the far right with 2016 and going back to 1980. On the y-axis, you have the percentage chance it will be rebooted in 2017. And right here, the dotted line is that's the 50% mark. Note that the chances for something being rebooted in 2017 increase around 1986 and end around 2001, peaking in 1995. That's the top of the bell curve.
That's the sweet spot.
So that's the sweet spot. Anything
we're gonna,
in there.
We're going to scan or take a photo of this chart and put it in the show post at npr.org/PCHH so that you can find it.
Right. So here's what I'm narrowing it down to. Not Murphy Brown, not Mad About You, Helen Hunt's not coming back, not Northern Exposure. Rob Morrow was done with that show even before it was done. I'm narrowing it down to Frasier, although Kelsey Grammer doesn't need any money. He owns several tropical islands. So they would need to throw a lot of money at that to make that happen. Blossom, Saved by the Bell, Family Matters. Family Matters will be rebooted in 2017. So say I. So say I.
Wow.
Reginald Bell Johnson, call your agent. I was going to say The Nanny. I'm going with Family Matters.
Here's kind of my thinking about that. When you say be rebooted, I think to myself, is it the kind of thing where the people who were on it could potentially show up on Dancing with the Stars? And my thing is like, yes, I think it is. So therefore,
as a matter of fact, I want to see Reginald Val Johnson on Dancing with the Stars.
I agree. Why hasn't that happened? Exactly. And so, yeah, that makes
similarly
sense.
Bold.
Wow. Similarly bold.
I like
You're
it.
You're putting yourself out there, Glenn. Mm-hmm.
It's Love true. It. I like it. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Kat Chow, I want to hear your prediction from this year.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So I predict that HGTV is going to step more toward building out their hosts' narratives, like their personal narratives, in a very meaningful way. So Fixer Upper, why that show works to me is because you have these two adorable hosts. You have Chip and JoJo.
All right.
And they have like this very Waco life, and it doesn't feel at all manufactured, where like they're making fun of each other on camera. And it's very much a departure from the like Property Virgins-esque, House Hunter-esque type of thing, or even like Love It or List It, which I have really grown to dislike.
And it's a warmer and fuzzier host narrative.
Yes, and it feels like a relationship that you really aspire to have. For HGTV in general, home buying and home improvement is really aspirational because like you're actually improving something. But to also inject that really human part where it's more about personal relationships is so smart. And we've already seen that trend with with Property Brothers.
So your prediction is that HGTV is going to continue to follow this mold of like making the hosts more accessible and personal, and that that whole like super powerful basic cable brand is going to get more voicey and less kind of like...
Right. I don't think they're going to move away from like the House Hunters offshoots, like the Tiny House Hunters and stuff like that. I will also make one more prediction that I just came up with now, and so I'm a little wishy-washy on this. So I think they will have a non-white host in that they will try and bring up that narrative. I kind of think maybe HGTV sees the value in reaching a different audience, and so maybe they're going to expand.
That was all wrong.
Where was I? What was I thinking?
I don't know. I don't know if it was. I mean, go on. Why do you think it was wrong?
Well, first of all, I love that I described those narratives as very meaningful and not fabricated, because that's kind of reaching, Kat.
2015 Kat.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, so like beginning of 2016, we saw Property Brothers at Home, where they went and rebuilt a ranch house and then their Vegas property. But then you also saw more new shows that were very much of the style of Flip or Flop, or kind of just where they flip houses and you have a very hetero couple, a white couple, playing various roles. And I just didn't see much of that. And as far as the last prediction I had, so sad, I don't think I saw any shows with non-white hosts new to this year.
Interesting. I do want to acknowledge, though, one thing that to some degree reflects what you were talking about. Because one thing that you were talking about was hosts, the kind of personal narratives of hosts coming more to the forefront, right? I would acknowledge that sort of in a different way than perhaps you expected, there's recently been this whole dust up about Chip and Joanna Gaines and the fact that the church that they belong to has a pastor who believes in conversion therapy and doesn't believe in gay marriage and all of that stuff. And I think that controversy, whatever you believe about the intersection between, you know, how relevant is that if you watch the show, how much does it impact who's on the show, for example, whatever you believe about it, I do think it reflects that a kind of intense personal interest has developed around them as people and what their beliefs are and what they do, that I think to some degree supports what you were saying, that the narratives around those hosts were going to become more significant in the programming of the network, although maybe not the way that you were.
Right. It's not the network backing those narratives.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you have on tap for 2017?
So for 2017, I think that Moonlight's going to do really well at the Oscars, I hope. I mean, this is also a hopeful thing. I think and hope that Barry Jenkins might have a shot at Best Director. And my other prediction for 2017 is that on TV shows, I think that we're going to be seeing more storylines that have to do with immigrant narratives and narratives about people of color that are directly linked to the news. And these are going to be TV shows where we might not necessarily expect that. So for Fresh Off the Boat, for example, before the election, there was a very kind of what felt like a ham-handed attempt at looking at immigration. And it was the episode called Citizen Jessica, where Jessica, who's played by Constance Wu, she's the mother, she was the quote-unquote good immigrant, and there was a quote-unquote bad immigrant. And it was kind of the overall message is that we should be more welcoming to immigration and immigrants. And I think that as a new presidency unfolds, I think that TV writers are going to be looking to bring those themes more into their plots.
Very interesting. Thank you very much, Kat Chow. All right, I didn't make any predictions for... No, I did.
Oh, yeah.
No, I did. Let's hear my prediction from 2016. I predict that during 2016, Netflix is going to start to make some kind of information about viewing available, which they have really resisted doing. They have really resisted telling you how many people watch anything, which has resulted in them being able to kind of say, like, this is a huge hit. And then they don't tell you who watches anything. Now, the traditional idea of this has been they don't have any reason to.
Right.
Because they don't rely on ratings, so they don't need ad. They don't need ad sales. And why would you tell when it might just reveal that certain things aren't doing as well as you think?
Yeah.
When you have competition from other streaming services, it starts to be more difficult to position yourself. For one thing, when you're in competition with like Hulu or whoever to pick up more shows and you're trying to figure out like what you should pay, everybody kind of wants to understand a little bit more and is willing to do a little more digging around into kind of like what kind of contract are you trying to make and how many people really are watching. And what's the value? And actors are starting to talk a little bit about people needing to know the basics of this in order to be able to negotiate. I think that, in addition to the fact that this has just been going on for long enough now, they're starting to put out stuff where, like, for example, Netflix put something out the other day claiming that Narcos was more popular than Game of Thrones, more popular or more successful or a bigger hit or something like that. And the problem is you put stuff out like that and people start to say, prove it or stop saying things like that.
Yeah.
So I think the more they see value in the competitive nature of actually showing things that are, I don't think they're going to start telling you exactly how many people watch everything, but I think they're going to start to cough up a little bit more than they've been coughing up for the benefit of the shows where they think it will help. Okay, so here is where that prediction was completely not right. They have not done very much of that voluntarily. They have continued with a couple of kind of little projects to release data like, we can tell you the episode where people got quote unquote hooked on different shows. In other words, the episode where if you got this far into the show, it was like, I forget what percentage they use. It was very likely that you would then finish the whole thing. They've started to put out kind of those little boutique numbers. They have not really started to release voluntarily data. However, in the summer of 2016, Nielsen started to find its own ways of measuring what people were watching on Netflix and put out its first reports on how many people watched Orange is the New Black. So the hole that is left by Netflix not doing this voluntarily is indeed being kind of stepped into by third-party services, not just the ones at the beginning that sounded kind of sketchy that were sort of putting it together from what sounded like kind of suspect data, but, you know, ones like Nielsen, where people are traditionally accustomed to looking to them to measure. So it definitely didn't happen the way I thought, but it's moving in that direction a little bit anyway.
Were the numbers for Orange is the New Black, for example, were they surprising? Were they in line with?
They were strong. They were on par with a strong popular cable show, basically. Yeah. They weren't, you know, it wasn't 20 million, but I think it was between 6 and 7 is my recollection. Mm-hmm. Watched in the first couple days that the premiere of the season was out, which is, you know, strong.
Yeah.
Didn't get it right, but was in the ballpark of something that happened. And I'm giving myself
right-ish.
I'm giving myself like a B minus on that prediction.
Yeah, way better than
it's
mine.
Passing.
Yeah. Giving myself a B minus. So my first prediction is an Oscars prediction. prediction. I have one also. And my Oscars prediction is that, contrary to what some of you have expressed that you believe in the past, I do not necessarily think La La Land is going to win Best Picture. I think it peaked too early. I don't think the reviews have been quite strong enough. And I think it's the one that goes in as a favorite and then fades in the stretch, which is a very common Oscars pattern. I think what's going to surge going into awards season is Hidden Figures. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with Hidden Figures, it is about Black women who worked at NASA, and it stars Taraji P. Henson and Octavia Spencer and Janelle Monáe, who, if you saw Janelle Monáe in Moonlight, you know she's having a really, really cool year. And I have not even seen Hidden Figures yet as we tape this, but the people that I know who have seen it have been really enthusiastic about it. A kind of a broad variety of people who tend to like different kinds of movies. So I'm really encouraged about it. I think that's the one that's kind of my sleeper for awards consideration as we move on. So that's my Oscar prediction. My other prediction is that this year you're going to see the first breakout fiction podcast. Now, I want to make a point. I'm not saying first important or good or beloved fiction podcast. A lot of times you'll hear that and it kind of sweeps under the rug stuff like Night Vale and other shows that I absolutely don't mean to slight. There's a difference between groundbreaking and breakout. I mean breakout like as in what Serial was for nonfiction podcasts, meaning the one where people who don't think of themselves as into a thing or are very casual followers suddenly are talking about the thing. Like when I heard about Serial from two ladies literally under hair dryers at my salon. I think you're going to see a fiction podcast in 2017 that gets that kind of momentum and starts to kind of change that conversation so that fiction podcasts are not treated like a lesser relative of nonfiction podcasts as they often are now. So those are our predictions and resolutions. Again, if you have predictions for 2017, come and find us on Facebook, facebook.com/PCHH. Tweet at us at PCHH. Tell us what you think is going to happen in 2017. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Blue Apron. Blue Apron partners with sustainable farms, fisheries, and ranchers to bring you all the ingredients you need to create incredible home-cooked meals. Ingredients come paired with an easy-to-follow recipe card delivered to your door weekly in a refrigerated box. Rediscover how fun cooking can be while enjoying specialty ingredients and exploring new flavors and cuisines. Get your first three Blue Apron meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/happyhour.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what's making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, a little while back, I had a conversation with my daughter. I was driving her to school in the morning, and I was asking how she was doing. And she was saying, Dad, I actually had trouble sleeping last night. I'm so excited they're dropping the new episode of Yuri on Ice. Yuri on Ice, it is gay anime about male figure skaters. And it is sort of serialized drama, you know, half hour long episodes, you know, 23 minutes really. And it has so gotten under her skin as an absolute obsession that I had to try it. I went to Funimation.com, watched an episode, not to my liking at all. not for Stevens. The script/translation's a little clunky. I wasn't immediately swept up with love for the characters. But watching the most easily bored 12-year-old, someone who is so averse to showing enthusiasm for anything because that's the age, watching this huge just geyser of excitement and interest popping up around a piece of pop culture has been glorious to behold. If you, your kid, anyone you know, happens to love gay anime about male figure skaters,
yep, I love that.
Really check this show out because it has stoked some very serious passions.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
The Hunt for the Wilder People is a New Zealand film written and directed by Taika Waititi, who co-wrote and co-directed with Jemaine Clement the excellent 2014 vampire mockumentary What We Do in the Shadows. And this film, well, I mean, the infrastructure is there's a precocious young kid and a crusty old guy who hates kids. So you know what's going to happen. You know the bones of this story. But the execution is great. The execution is dry and wry. It's about a kid from the streets of New Zealand who gets shipped off into the bush to be with this family. A thing happens, and the young boy and the old man must go out into the bush and make a life of their own out there while they're hunted down by child services. It aches for you to be charmed by it. It aches for you to find it idiosyncratic. And it looks great, and Sam Neill plays the crusty old guy, and he's great. And you know what this film is going to do to you going in, but you let it happen because the execution is so sharp and smart. So that's Hunt for the Wilder People.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Glenn Weldon. Kat Chow, what is making you happy this week?
What's making me happy is Difficult Woman by Roxane Gay, and it's a short story collection, fiction, of different strong women, including a woman who's made out of glass, who's married to a stone thrower. So in this book, Roxane is playing with a lot of great metaphors, and her writing, as always, is very beautiful.
Oh, thank you very much, Kat Chow. Difficult Women by Roxane Gay. Thank you, Kat. What is making me happy this week? I've got two things. One is we are at the end of December as this episode drops. And if you have not been following along as he published it, you should go back and read from the month of December, Glenn Weldon's Pop Culture Advent Calendar, which he published on the first 25 days of December, correct? Mm-hmm. And it's for every day, not just work days, weekends too. He published a little tidbit about something good from pop culture from the year. There's TV in there, there's movies in there, there's all kinds of good stuff. And there is for each day also a gorgeous little piece of Glenn Weldon writing. Some love has gone into not just selecting these things, but also writing about them. So I encourage you to go and read that. That's at npr.org/monkeysee. You can find those posts.
Thanks, pal.
The other thing, and there's an asterisk on this one, but I still find it fascinating, and that is the return of Top Chef, one of my very favorite reality shows. Top Chef's current season is in Charleston. And Charleston is, first of all, a really good food town, and second of all, a really complicated history town. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, when they first came back, the first episode of the season, the first big challenge took place at a plantation between a black chef and a white chef. Took a lot of criticism, I think fairly, for not really dealing with that as much as they should have. But nevertheless, it is a season that has raised a lot of interesting conversations around food and the culture around food. And I think one of the reasons why people were concerned about it is that they expect a lot from Top Chef. It is a very intelligent, thoughtful show for the most part. And so I'm curious to see, as we tape this, that season's not done. And I'm going to be curious to see sort of how it plays out and how they deal with that going forward. There's just a ton of complex history in Charleston. And the other distinguishing characteristic of the season is that they brought back a set of previously competing chefs. And often when that happens, the people they bring back are obnoxious. And they're people who I don't want to see again because they're people who the producers felt made, quote unquote, good television, which often means I was just sitting there waiting for them to be gone. But Top Chef has done a couple of all-star seasons, and they've been really fun. And this one, they brought back a whole bunch of people that I was really happy to see again.
Mm-hmm.
There's
too.
A woman named Brooke, who I really liked in her season, who didn't win. There's a woman named Shirley, who I adored in her season, and she didn't win. There are a couple of exceptions, but for the most part, they really brought back people where my reaction was, oh, cool. Oh, sure. Hey. You know, and that's rare. And so I have been really enjoying that season, and those are the things that are making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Stephen at IDislikeStephen and Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can follow Kat at Kat Chow. That's K-A-T-C-H-O-W. You can follow our producer Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy and our producer emeritus and music director Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music that you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening to our show throughout 2016, and we will see you back here next week.